You're listening to the oneofus.net podcast network. Hey, Patience, what are you doing here?
Oh, I'm just hanging out, drinking some beer.
Yeah, okay, well, what do you got there?
I have this delicious Bud Light. Why are you looking at me like that?
You drink a fucking Bud Light?
Well, yeah, I mean...
Have you been to the bar? You see there's other beers there? Okay, do you see what I'm drinking?
Well, yeah, you're drinking, what is that, a little yellow pill?
Yeah, it's an Oscar Blues beer. They're a local Austin brewery. Well, they have two in Denver and they have one in North Carolina, but they're really good. Look, you know what? I know that you've been sold by the man to think that maybe these Budweiser, they're all American or something, but nothing's more American than a craft brewery like Oscar Blues Brewery, right? You know what? Here, I'm just gonna throw that over there.
Okay.
There you go. Now drink this. Mama's little yellow pills.
Fine. Oh, that's actually doesn't taste like piss water. It's really, really good.
Exactly. It's for people who don't want to drink piss water, who want light and refreshing without piss water.
You changed my life, Chris.
You're so welcome.
It's that time of year again, Chris.
Which time is that, Richard?
It's Fantastic Fest time.
Oh my god, I'm so excited! Because this is the greatest week of the year!
For those of you that don't know our dulcet tones, I'm Richard Whitaker, I'm the screens editor with the Austin Chronicle.
I am Christopher Cox, I'm the owner and operator of oneofus.net, a podcast network located here in Austin, Texas.
And welcome to the very first of our joint podcast this year for Fantastic Fest, the massive 8-day... marathon/sprint celebration of all things genre related in cinema that happens at the Alamo Draft House here in Austin. Today we're going to be the first of those podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be doing a show every single day throughout the 8 days of the festival, bringing you news, reviews, interviews, our opinions on the ground, just what's been happening from what has been regarded for. Its 13-year run as one of the great tastemaker festivals in American cinema.
Absolutely. I only missed 2 years, and believe me, those were not by choice. But this year looks great. I think a lot of people are very excited about it, and that comes in somewhat of a stark contrast to last year.
Yeah, elephant in the room time. Last year, Fantastic Fest was caught up in really kind of the first wave of Me Too. 2017 was a rough year. There were allegations about not people directly involved with the festival per se at the time, but people who had been affiliated with other Alamo Drafthouse elements. And then, of course, Devin Faraci, it had turned out he'd written some of the blurbs for the guide last year. This led to a lot of soul searching at the festival. They've had some administrative changes. They've expanded the booking team a lot. So this year really is kind of the... maybe a return to form, I think they're hoping for. It's going to be interesting to see how everything shakes out, whether there's a different tone, whether there's a different mood to the event, how everything is handled. Because they're coming under not as much of a cloud as I think some people thought they were going to. I think there were some people who genuinely thought last year was going to be the last year. But, it's back. And,
hopefully better than ever.
Yeah, hopefully so.
And certainly we've got the same arrangement of films from all over the world.
Oh, yeah.
Like, including some horror films from countries who've never had a horror film before, yep. Which is always interesting.
Which is always one of the things that I've always liked about Fantastic Fest, is it will find... If you're a small international filmmaker... And you're in a country that doesn't have a tradition of making a certain kind of film. Being the first person to do that can be really, really hard because there's no infrastructure. People don't know what you're trying to do. If you're trying to make something that's culturally specific to where you come from, it's tough to find an audience, and then it's tough to get that taken elsewhere. So, and even in established film industries like Israel, a few years ago, we had the Rabbit, the first Israeli horror film.
Mm-hmm.
And it was tough for them to get that funded because the Israeli film industry doesn't do horror films.
Right.
Then it was tough for them to find somewhere to get that shown. And it's very important to have something like Fantastic Fest. That is that first stop for a lot of filmmakers and for a lot of regional film, international film. first-time filmmakers, and a lot of amazing new voices.
And a lot of those new voices, more and more, not just from around the world, but here in America, get their start in genre, because you can get a lot of attention starting off that way. A lot of big names have gotten their start way. So it's always really interesting to see what's coming out of these other countries like that, that a lot of other festivals ignore just because of the nature of it being a horror movie or what have you. But we actually, this is the first episode of our Cronavus
series. Hashtag Cronavus.
Yes. That's C-H-R.
My fault. I apologize deeply, everyone. But yeah, we'll be using that all through the week. You see anything hashtag Cronoverse, or you want to tag us on anything, any photos, any news you have, your take on films. If people have something really great that they've seen, we'll be keeping track of that. We'll definitely be trying to get as many reviews and as many films out in front of people before either they appear in cinemas later in the year or start to pick up distribution buzz.
Well, this first recording we're calling Ones to Watch because the festival hasn't actually started yet. This will be going up and you'll have a chance to listen to it. And we're hoping we can throw you a few recommendations of stuff that we'll be playing this year, of things that we think will definitely or arguably be worth your time.
Yeah.
Of course, some of the big ones obviously are ones that have to be mentioned. The not even elephant in the room, just The Room is Halloween.
Opening night film, U.S. premiere.
Yeah, David Gordon Green, who's the last person I would have personally picked to direct a Halloween movie, but...
Well, you know, and former Austinite. He's moved back to the Carolinas, I do believe. But, you know, David, we still miss you. He came off... That's the thing about David, is that he's been such an unpredictable filmmaker. He'll do something like Prince Avalanche, which is this weird super indie comedy, and then he'll follow it up with Joe, which is Nick Cage in one of his, you know, an Oscar-worthy performance. I'm still annoyed he didn't get trapped.
That's still my favorite Green film.
It's amazing. And then something like Manglehorn, which is this weird, weird observational comedy. And then he'll go and do something like Our Business is Crisis, which is this big studio event. But yeah, I think even for him, I don't think anybody saw Halloween coming.
No, and also the writer, what's his name, Danny McBride, who's obviously better known as a comedian, who come out and said, like, no, Halloween's like my favorite movie of all time, and we are not making this a comedy. We are not making a rock salt origin story. This is us trying to make a genuinely scary sequel to the original Halloween with exactly I always wanted to see Jamie Lee Curtis do in retrospect of this, which is basically she's Linda Hamilton from Terminator 2.
Yeah.
She is gone, I'm going to be ready in case this happens again.
And this has come with the approval of John Carpenter. Jamie Lee Curtis is back.
John Carpenter is an executive producer and recorded the score.
And they've stuck lots of little Easter eggs, like the original shape actually turns up at one point in the movie.
Who's now in his 70s, but hell.
That one clearly everybody's really excited about.
I think another one people are more curious than excited at this point is Terry Gilliam's The Man Who Killed Don Quixote.
Which, a film that was in production so long, on and off, that there was actually a documentary about the film failing to get made, which I think is now actually... I think the documentary is now old enough to get a driving license, and I'm really not kidding on that.
Lost in La Mancha?
Lost in La Mancha, which I think is about 16 years old now. This is this weird passion project of his that he has tried and failed to get made, and finally it got done, and then it kind of got caught in this weird deal of whether it could actually get shown theatrically or not. Clearly, that's been shook free from that problem. Going to be interesting to see what this is. It's had very mixed word.
Yes.
Shall we say. But then, that's Terry Gilliam. I can't remember the last time everybody was unified in saying a Terry Gilliam film was great. I think it may be Brazil.
Or bad.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I remember Tideland. I was one of those people who was like, ugh.
Tideland, I think there's been a lot of revisionism on Tideland.
Yeah.
At the time, nobody liked it. There's a few people who are now coming out of the woodwork saying, like, I kind of get where it's going.
Right.
But when your director has to stand at the front of the film and go, so, this may not be for everybody. That's a bit of a problem.
Yeah. They even included that little thing on the beginning of the New Era release with him going, guys, maybe this isn't for you. If not, shut up about it.
Yeah. But this is, you know, again, it's the Terry Gilliam mystique. He's able to get a remarkable cast. You know, he's got Adam Driver in the lead. So it's going to be interesting to see how the audience responds to this one.
Obviously, one of the ones a lot of people are buzzing about is J.J. Abrams' new film Overlord, which originally was reported as being a film set in the Cloverfield universe, which after the last Cloverfield movie, I'm not sure anybody particularly wants another one.
I think they may have walked that one back.
Or it could be one of those ones where, because Abrams lies about his own movies all the time, so it's possible, oh, the big surprise is it is part of the Cloverfield universe.
I think if they do go, it's Cloverfield Overlord, I think that will actually be badly received at this point. I think actually put some clear blue water between you and it. But right. This is
Castle Wolfenstein.
Yeah, it's basically all Frankenstein's. It's a big budget Frankenstein's army,
right? Which is so good, and people should seek it out and watch it. By the way,
wonderful, nasty, weird little World War II found footage movie. Definitely worth catching. This is very much the same kind of deal. US paratroopers drop behind enemy lines during World War II and find Nazi monsters. Presuming just lots of things are going to blow up or die, which is, you know, I think that's all you're going to want from this. I don't think this is going to be a complicated film. I think this is no. I think this is the mandatory Fantastic Fest big budget romp. They have to have one every year.
Right. And whereas I've had mixed feelings about Abrams' actual releases, this is everything else about it is totally my cup of tea. You know, I've probably actually watched four different versions of this exact same plot for different movies, to be fair. So there's
with different
that.
Budgets. As
yeah,
well.
With different, very different budgets. This will be the most expensive version of the story.
I think so.
Then we have Bad Times at the El Royale.
Which is the closing night film, which is the second Chris Hemsworth film to have closed out Fantastic Fest.
The first one was Cabin in the Woods?
No, because that wasn't a closing night film, was it?
Was it? I can't remember.
No, it was Red Dawn.
Yeah, okay. That was the year I wasn't there.
Yeah.
And I was not sad about missing it.
All I will say, it was a good party.
Oh, fair enough. And that actually makes me wonder about the party for this one, because no one knows yet where they're going to throw the famous big Fantastic Fest closing party, but everyone's like, it's got to be at like an old hotel, right?
Yeah.
It's got to be.
Sadly, I will actually be out of town for the closing night this year, which is really rather unfortunate.
So you won't be in any of the embarrassing footage that we shoot during that for our fans to see.
No. I will be there throughout the entirety of everything else, and we will be doing a wrap-up podcast the week after, once we've all recovered and collected our our dripping unconsciousness.
Yeah, scooped our brain cells back into our heads. And
before we talk about some more films, there's also one of the big late additions, which was really kind of a surprise, is that Tenacious D are going to be there.
That's literally the single most exciting thing about this festival for me. I'm a total D-head.
That's been said about you before.
Right? No matter what they say, I think they are the greatest band in the world. I'm sorry. I'm going to deny their own words. Say, no, you are. In fact, I really want to ask them. So, on a Led Zeppelin scale, which album are you at?
Yes. But yeah, Tenacious D are going to be coming with their new series, Post Apocalypto.
Which in and of itself is the soundtrack to the new Tenacious D album.
Yeah. So very excited about that.
Playing live as well.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. Netflix is going to have a big presence here at the festival this
Netflix
year.
They've got Hold the Dark, which is the
new Jeremy Saulnier,
who did Green Room and Blue Ruin.
Yeah,
no, he wrote.
Oh, did he write it?
Wrote and directed.
Yeah. I get, because he's one of those guys. Sometimes he's just a writer. Sometimes he's a writer director. Sometimes he's just a director. And he's an actor too. Sometimes,
yeah.
Isn't he?
And this is him doing a wilderness movie. And few people do mental breakdown under horrible stress better than him. I think he's one of the best gritty directors out there. It'd be really fascinating to see him do a film with no violence. Mm-hmm. I'd love to see him do that, just because I think he'd do something really just incredibly insightful, because he's that good about people. But again, this is nasty things happening to bad people in the wilderness, and I am completely there for
it. Jeffrey Wright being called in as a tracker to hunt down what everyone thinks is a werewolf.
Yeah.
That sounds like my kind of movie.
Absolutely.
And I think Jeffrey Wright has proven unquestionably, he is, to anyone who wasn't familiar with him with his film work on Westworld, he is a force to be reckoned with, no question. And then Cam, which is one of the ones you were like, if you don't watch Cam, I will kill you.
This played at Fantasia, and this thing is amazing. It's a sci-fi socio-sexual horror. But the first half of it is just what it is to be a cam girl.
Mm.
That's what it does.
Actually written by someone who was a sex worker/cam girl.
Yeah. And it's reminded me of no film quite so much in recent memory as, and you may have to hunt this down, but it's really glorious, Most Beautiful Island, which again has this kind of twist in the, of moves into a really unique, beautifully handled horror aspects in the second and third act. But the first part of it is just what it is to be part of a group, a marginalized group in America. In this case, it's sex workers in Most Beautiful Island. It's a European, an undocumented European migrant in New York. And it just talks about what it is to be in that environment.
This also brings back memories of films like The Devil or some, or Enemy, where it gets into sort of that loss of identity through having a feeling like you're not sure which person you are.
Yeah.
And you can watch this film as, you know, a very obvious allegories for these thoughts that go through the sex worker's mind, or you can watch it as a really creepy little horror film that you just keeps you guessing on where it's going to go.
It's also, and I will say this, and we won't go into more detail, this is one of the most sex-positive films I have seen at any festival in years.
Agreed.
Which is great.
Since Kink.
Yeah, it's really fantastic in that point. The big one, I think, though, from Netflix is clearly Apostle.
I'm so excited.
Which is Gareth Evans, who made the Raid films. It is a complete and deliberate change of pace for him. If you pick up this week's Austin Chronicle, which hits the stands on Thursdays, and you will find at austinchronicle.com, I have a big interview with Gareth about why he decided to make what he describes as a, you know, British folk horror. This is very much in the tone of Witchfinder General, The Witches.
That's not what I expected to hear at all.
It's a radical change of pace. He was also very much influenced by more contemporary films like A Field in England and Kill List. It's much more in that tone. If as he said to me, yeah, this is not ye olde Taken. even though it is Dan Stevens in the lead, who can really hold his own as an action star. This is a special film, and it's going to be really interesting to see what the response is. People are going to walk in expecting one thing, and I think they're going to really be blown by something very, very different.
I would argue Dan Stevens is the biggest chameleon in the acting business right now. He's slipped into a role, and he's almost, you're like, wow, that's Dan Stevens?
He can do about anything. Every director I've ever talked to about Dan says that there's two things. One, he is the nicest person you could possibly have on set. Two, that he has more tricks and skills and hidden abilities when it comes to acting and little things that change performance than you can possibly imagine. He's also a master of accents.
That is true.
Yeah, nobody is better at accents. But yeah, again, read the article this week because Gareth actually has this great story about a thing that Dan was fitting into the performance that even he didn't realize until afterwards that he'd done. I think he's one of the best actors out there at the moment. And if you know him from Legion, this is going to be one of the films that you are going to want to really catch either at Fantastic Fest or when it comes to Netflix later this year.
And let's not forget Iko Uwe, the star of The Raid, is also a featured player in said film, which means there will be some degree of ass kicking.
Is Iko in that one?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Yeah. No. This is a film I think is going to really surprise people.
Okay.
It really extends what Gareth does as a filmmaker.
The last Netflix one is The Night Comes for Us.
Yes.
Which you know more about than I do.
That's the last one. But this is actually one of the Indonesian films that's there this year. I think a lot of people were surprised that Satan's Slaves, which played in a lot of other festivals, didn't turn up on the list this year. But that's been acquired by Shudder, so that's actually something that, if you want a Fantastic Fest-ish film soon and you can't be there, that one's coming to Shudder very soon. But this is a gangster action film out of Indonesia. I think there's a lot of excitement about that one.
Okay, so now our last segment, and keep in mind, none of these are really reviews. We will have full reviews of lots and lots of films as these days goes on.
Lots and lots and lots, both at austinchronicle.com and oneofus.net.
Indeed, but to finish this off, I'm just going to say, well, first off, don't forget, there are still badges available for this festival, and it's going to be so worth it on multiple different tiers, including this year for the first time, the $99 midnight badges, which means you can just see whatever's playing at midnight every night, which guaranteed is always the choices, the craziest films playing the festival. So if that's your thing, that sounds like something like pretty good deal there.
Yeah.
Pretty good deal. But our last segment here is recommended, which is just things we admit we've already seen and we're not going to review. We're just going to throw out with briefly what it is and say, definitely on our you should check this out list. Yes. Richard, why don't you get started?
I'm going to start off with something that actually has played at some other festivals before. And that is One Cut of the Dead.
Yes.
Which is, it played Fantasia, it's played a few other places. I think it's getting distribution lined up. It's Japanese. The first 37 minutes is a single cut, a single shot zombie film about a zombie film being made and then real zombies invade. And you go, well, this is kind of looks like a Japanese TV anthology film.
Yeah, you're like, yeah. This is clever that it's all one cut, so to speak, but other than that.
And then it takes a radical turn because it's actually a film about making that film.
Yeah.
And it's this wonderful family comedy that's also one of the best films about indie filmmaking since Living in Oblivion.
Agreed.
This is just a weird, wild gem of a film, and it's exactly the kind of thing that you really want from Fantastic Fest. This was, by the end, I just had a massive smile plastered all over my face because this is just a wonderful, heartfelt little movie.
One of mine was The Boat, which is a little film where it was written by a father-son team, directed by the father, and starring only the son. So an interesting project to begin with a guy who's got a little outboard boat and he goes into a cave. It looks like it's Greece. It's unclear. And finds amidst a mysterious mist, a beautiful yacht floating there, like a sailboat type yacht. He gets on board. It looks around. Everything looks normal except no one's on it. When he gets back out of the boat up top, his boat is missing. The mist clears and he's in the middle of the ocean with no working compass and a boat that seems to have a bit of a mind of its own. I kept calling it, it's the Christine of boats, basically what we've got here, but without delving so much into the overt Stephen King theatrics or Satanism or anything like that. Very tense film that I think people are going to be really interested in seeing. Interesting, one actor can hold your attention for that long, but he really does.
Real change of pace, and I'm actually going to throw you a curveball here, Lady World.
Did not see that coming.
Which, there's kind of this whole idea these days, and it's something people always say, that of like, oh, well, you couldn't have Lord of the Flies with a bunch of teenage girls because they wouldn't turn on each other in that way. The central idea of Lady Hawk, which is written and directed by Amanda Kramer, has an amazing cast of up-and-coming young actresses, including Ethan Hawke's daughter, Maya, who's also in the next season of Stranger Things. The idea is that it's after a birthday party and there's an earthquake and the house sinks into the ground and the girls are sealed in.
Right.
And how they turn on each other. And
Lord of the Flies, basically.
Again, I talked to the filmmaker about this, and there's an interview with her in this week's issue of the Chronicle, and it's very much about how women turn on each other. It's very specifically about that. It's not just transcribing Lord of the Flies and making them the same characters. There are some great Lord of the Flies references, which are very deliberate, but it's very specifically, you know, she said to me, you know, she's fascinated by female tedium. And what happens in women's minds when they're bored. And this is a glorious and unexpected, will I think be very controversial, because a lot of people are not going to want to see a female filmmaker. And she said this herself. They're not going to want to see a female filmmaker make a film where it's an all-female cast and things go this south and they do turn on each other. But her argument and her story is undeniably wonderful. This is one of the tougher films to watch, I think, for a lot of people, but it's going to be fascinating to see what the response is.
One of the films I'll say I was most impressed by so far was The Night Shifter, which is from Brazilian filmmaker Denison Ramalho, who did the Last Coffin Joe film, Embodiment of Evil, in 2010, Ninjas. And
which is
then
one of the best shorts that has ever played Fantastic.
Indeed. And then J is for Jesus from ABCs of Death 2. This is a full feature-length film with a morgue attendant who has the ability to talk to the dead, which they do wonderfully by choosing whenever it's a corpse 99% of the time for it to actually be a dummy that's doing it instead of the actor, even though it was a weird decision. You're like, why isn't it the actor? It's like, no, because it's creepier when there's an uncanny valley you want
yeah.
there. And he makes the unfortunate choice of taking some information that he learned and using it for his own benefit.
This does not end well.
In a bad way. And things get super intense and honestly, really scary.
Yeah.
This is one of the scariest films I've seen at Fantastic Fest in the last several years. And if you're one of those people looking for something that's truly a scarer and that's really gory as well, this is the movie to seek out.
I've been a huge fan of his work since Ninjas. I really was blown away by that, and I really wanted to see something that built on that world. And this really does. It's not a sequel. It's not just it didn't use that as a proof of concept. It just goes, this is an environment with a really smart idea. How do we build out into the idea of melding the supernatural with life in Brazil? Mm-hmm. And this thing is just stellar.
Yep. With really interesting characters as well. And now it's your turn.
Again, I'm going to throw you another curveball, but this is the complete opposite end of the horror pool. You Might Be the Killer.
Right.
Which is which is basically Josh Whedon alums, Frank Kranz and Allison Hannigan. The setup is that Frank Kranz's character is the last surviving camp counselor when there's a massacre.
One of the last surviving.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, well, he's not sure how many are left.
Yeah.
This is the whole thing.
He's like, maybe no one, maybe a few.
He calls his friend, played by Allison Hannigan, who runs a comic store, and is like, what do I do? Because you understand how serial killer tropes work in films. Now, this sounds like it's heading into kind of Scream knockoff territory.
Sure.
This is much more like
The Final
Tucker
Girls.
Tucker and Dale versus Evil.
That too.
It's really funny. It takes some really surprising turns. Super smart little, jet black, late night, gory broad comedy that really works.
What I liked about this was the fact they did it non-linear, but the whole film is mainly a conversation with him on the phone as she's reminding him, like saying, let's go through this slowly so you can remember what happens. And the film scoots back and forth in time, and the way we know when it is a big red number on the screen that shows us how many counselors are dead at this point each time, which is a really clever
super
device.
Super smart MacGuffin. Yeah. And I think that that shows you kind of the diversity of films, but that you're getting here. But yeah, what's your number three to look out for?
Well, there's a couple different ones that were competing, but ultimately I'm going to have to say going to be at Mixed Reactions films, Piercing.
Yes.
Which is a very interesting little film that I promised I would not say much in terms of review for. I promised the reviews, like, please don't actually review this. And we want people to see it on the big screen because it's a big screen film. So that being said, it is two actors. Largely two rooms. one guy who is a married man, but he has decided he's going to go on a business trip, I say with air quotes, and get himself a prostitute. And
that's all you need to know. This is Nicholas Pesci, who directed Eyes of My Mother. It's the same kind of feel, but radically different at the same time. Mm-hmm. This is a real evolution for him. And it's an adaptation of a book by the same author who wrote Audition.
Which should tell you something right there.
And it's a fascinating turn for him because his next film is, I spoke to him yesterday. He's currently in post-production on Grudge. The latest in the Grudge franchise.
Which, from this director, I'm like, well, how is he going to do the Grudge? Okay, well, I'm curious.
He's someone with a very definite vision and a very definite take. We will throw one more in, which is on both our lists, which is Starfish,
mm-hmm.
Which is basically a one-hander for most of its duration. Go in as blind as you can on this one is our recommendation, because this is a story about loss, the uncanny, making mistakes, and mixtapes. This is one of the best mixtape films you will see this year.
And this is definitely a film for people who like the sort of ambient science fiction.
Yes.
Who, when you think of those type of films, like maybe Upstream Color or something
very
like
much
that.
So. Very
that
much
I,
so.
I think that this is going to be up the alley of people who really enjoy that sort of thing. And was directed by the singer of the UK band Ghostlight, who fills this thing with apparently his favorite indie rock songs.
Yeah.
So it's very music oriented as well.
A lot of glorious post-rock in here.
Yeah.
This is one of my favorite scored films. And one that I'm looking forward to, which I haven't seen anything of yet, Graham Resnick, who has scored so many things, has done a series called Dead Wax for Shudder. So this is something else you'll be able to definitely see, which I know sometimes it's frustrating. We talk about films at festivals and you don't get to see them. But Graham Resnick's done a new series about basically evil vinyl that will be turning up on Shudder later this year. And that's something I am very excited
about. I am super into that. I tried to actually get a really copy because like, this sounds up my alley. And no. But just throwing out there, and the less said about this Nicolas Cage film, the better, Between Worlds. I hope it's playing mainly midnights. I haven't checked. It's definitely a film for the type of people who want to go in and have a experience not entirely unlike The Room. If you're with an audience, this is probably going to be one of your favorite films of the festival. Just saying, be prepared for the type of experience you're walking into.
Excellent.
And that wraps up this first episode of Cron of Us, which, or as we call on our site, and you can check out on oneofus.net previous reviews from earlier Fantastic Fests under Infestation. We thought that was a clever little pun.
It's delightful. you can also find regular updates and coverage from the Chronicle at austinchronicle.com/Fantastic Fest. We will be having a massive amount of updates, not just the podcast, but we're having reviews and interviews all through the festival. And follow us at austinchronicle.com and
at oneofus.net. We're also, we will be featuring bonus videos and photos on our Facebook page and on our Instagram page and on our Twitter page. So follow all those to see lots of cool behind the scenes wackiness.
which is the best description of Fantastic Fest.
Wackiness ensues.
So thank you so much for tuning in, and we will see you join the festival.